Bible, but as the Rivka. Before we come to the practical, practical in that sense, all of the halachos that we're discussing are practical, but before we come to the hands-on demonstration, I want to review a number of halachos. I mean, unfortunately, and that's one of the things that I wish to dispel, you tell someone in the United States, oh, there's an issue of trumas and maisers, so they're ready to throw it in the garbage. I think it's treif. Just throw it away. Get rid of it. I mean, the idea that there is an issue of trumas and maisers. There's an issue of shechita too. A lot of behemoths have an issue of shechita. They don't just throw the animals away. We take them and we shech them. There's what to do. There are mitzvahs that are involved. So, there are mitzvahs that are involved in afroshes, trumas, and maisers. And once we're mekayim the mitzvahs, so we can eat the peiros. And to the contrary, we find in the Bach and in the Chassam Sofer that consuming the peiros of Eretz Yisrael involves a certain kedusha. And the Gemara asks concerning Moshe Rabbeinu, why did he want to go to Eretz Yisrael? So we take the Gemara as a laconic statement. Was Moshe Rabbeinu interested in going to Eretz Yisrael because he wanted to eat a Jaffa orange? You know, one Jaffa orange before he died. That was his agenda. So the Gemara seems to ask it as a laconic question. Yet the Bach and the Shulchan Aruch and the Chassam Sofer and the Tshuva say it was not at all a laconic question. The Gemara meant that eating the peiros of Eretz Yisrael is itself a mitzvah and brings kedusha to a person. But Moshe Rabbeinu, at his level of Kedusha, did not need to involve himself in it. And that's what the Gemara's question was. The Gemara's question, at Madregas Moshe, was it necessary to add to his Kedusha by eating of the peiros of Eretz Yisrael as well? So there's a particular mitzvah to eat of the peiros of Eretz Yisrael. Now I wanted to air a few of the issues which have to do with Trumas and Maisers. They are relevant in Eretz Yisrael, but they're equally relevant in Chutz La'aretz too. Some of them a little bit more so, but because of the fact that today we have exports from Eretz Yisrael to here are very common, so whatever goes on in Eretz Yisrael is relevant to us as well. Now, one of the issues which has long been debated, it really stems all the way back to the Rishonim, Rabbeinu Tam, the Rashi. In the halacha during Shvius, during the Shemitah year, is one has to be mafker as peiros, to allow anyone to take of the peiros, anyone that wants to take of the peiros may take them. Now in practical terms, it doesn't mean that if I own an orchard, I just have to open up the gates and let anyone come in and do what they want there. Because it's self-evident, if I will do that, I won't have trees left standing at the end of the year. They'll ruin the trees as well. When you pick fruit, so when you trim back a tree, you have to do it in a way which doesn't kill the tree. And that you need a level of expertise to know. But just speaking to someone about trimming back a tree, he's an expert on trees, he says, yeah, you really do want to trim it back, but if you're going to trim it back in one stage, as far as you want to trim it back, the tree's going to die from the shock. Trim it back little by little by little until you get it to the point where you want it to be. But if you're in a rush, you're going to doom the tree. So in practical terms, the Balabayas has a right to install a shomer, a guard there, and if a person wants to go, he'll accompany the person and see and pick for the person, etc., to see that it's done properly. He doesn't have to let everyone just swoop down on his property and run loose. There's no such obligation. But he does have to let them in. Now, what happens if I have an orchard and I lock the gates of the orchard? I don't let anyone in. So what's the halacha? Now, I did not violate Shvius in the sense that I didn't work the land during Shvius. I have an apple tree, I don't have to work the land. For an apple tree, what I have to do is, I have to just wait until the apples grow and pick the apples. That's about all you have to do. Maybe you want to preserve the tree, so you give a spritz of this chemical and a spritz of that chemical to keep the bugs and the carpenter ants away from it. But basically, in things which are to preserve the tree, are mutter during Shvius anyhow. The Gemara says things to force the greater growth are not mutter. But things which are meant to preserve the tree, that the tree itself doesn't die, are 100% mutter to do during Shvius. And there's a chance in more than one place. But I may not So the production of the Peiros did not come about by Yisrael. I didn't plant the tree during Shvi'is. I have the tree. I just locked the gates of my orchard. So that's what we call Meshumar, meaning that they were under God, under lock and key. So what effect does that have on Peiros Shvi'is? Now most of the Rishonim hold that despite the fact that I violated an Yisrael by locking up the Peiros, but nevertheless, the Peiros remain mutter. One can consume those Peiros. Consequently, even if we're to buy pears from those who totally would not observe Shvi'is at all, fruits, there would be mutter b'achila. And this, as I say, this is the view of many, many, I believe most Rishonim, and this is the view, in fact, of Chachma Yerushalayim for generations. So, among the things which they're meikel about in Yerushalayim, in the Inyan of Shvi'is, is this particular halacha. That even if it came from an orchard, which was a chiloni orchard, and they did not allow, were not mafka the fruits, one may still eat of those fruits during Shvi'is. Yes?
What if they were tempted? What if they were used? What if they planted new trees?
That's something else. New trees don't usually give fruits the first year any year. Right? So usually, we don't have to be that concerned that the fruits which came about were planted in the in this particular year. I mean, fruit trees take a number of years until they give fruits. And before they get to that point, we have a bigger problem for us to consider which trees are Orlam, which we'll come back to.
So this refers only to fruits which grow on trees.
That's what we're talking about, yeah. So, even if they violated the halacha of Meshumar, it would still not make the fruits also. Now, among the Sokum of the Chazon Ish, which is, since he was the more of the Asra of Bnei Brak, his Midig Bnei Brak is in that regard, the Chazon Ish did not allow the use of Peiros that were Meshumar. It was Machmer like those Rishonim that were Machmer during Shvi'is. So Bnei Brak, you cannot use those Peiros. That's number one. But they have a number of chumras which divide the Chazon Ish from Chachmei Yerushalayim. A second, and this is a very critical issue, is what happens if you have fruits which were grown in Arab areas of Eretz Yisrael, or areas which are owned by Arabs during Shemitah year. What's the status of them? So this has to do with to what extent. This is a huge, huge commotion in the Rishonim. To what extent the acquisition of property by a non-Jew in Eretz Yisrael removes it totally from Kedusha Shvi'is or not is a major, major area of controversy. Now, in Chachmei Yerushalayim, we're of the view that the non-Jewish owner should totally remove Kedusha Shvi'is. So consequently, they were free to buy fruits which were grown in Arab areas of Eretz Yisrael, and without any concern with restrictions on use of those fruits, because the fruits don't have Kedusha Shvi'is. So typically, from Chachmei Yerushalayim, we'd go in earlier years to the West Bank, and buy fruits from the West Bank in the years when it was possible to do so. I mean, I don't have first-hand knowledge of what took place in the years before 1967, that I don't know. The first Shemitah after the Six-Day War was the year Tovshin Lamed Gimel. So from September 1972 through till September 1973. That was the first Shemitah which took place after the Six-Day War. And I happened to be that I learned in Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael that year. Now, we ate very, very well in Yeshiva. Very well. I have to tell you why. Because we had the executive director of the yeshiva owned the van, and he was, in fact, a very industrious fellow. So he wanted to take good care of us. So he used to go to Ramallah every week, to the Arab Shuk, and he used to load up the van till the Shemayim. We had oranges till the heavens that year. And with no concern for Peiros Shvi'is, because these were all Arab-produced oranges. This was the first Shemitah after the Six-Day War. And this prevailed until probably for about 20 years or so. till the time of the first intifada. After that, this became a tricky situation. The last Shvius, it's 5 years ago, so they wanted to buy fruits at that time from Jordan. And they put a lot of work into it, and then the intifada started, and by that time it just became an impossibility to bring the fruits overland from Jordan through the West Bank there, just so it was just not going to happen in that milieu. And they wound up importing from other countries overseas the fruits and vegetables that they were going to use. So this is a Chachmei Yerushalayim Paskin, that if Arabs own the land, or non-Jews own the land, there's no Kedusha Shvius. In Bnei Brak, they're machmir that there's Kedusha Shvius to these fruits. Now Kedusha Shvius presents a lot of difficulties if you have fruits with Kedusha Shvius. Why? Because you can't throw away Perish Shvius. So if you eat an orange, I think I'll add an orange, and I eat 3/4 of the orange, and I'm not in the mood to eat the rest of the orange. Good. So I can take it and throw it away if I want. What else am I going to do? I'm going to keep every, I have a little bit of a potato, a little bit of an onion left. So you throw it out. I have a half a cup of glass of wine left at the end of the meal. Spill it down the drain. But by Kedusha Shvius, this doesn't go. You're not allowed to just throw it away. So you have to be machmer to be very, very careful to actually finish everything that you use. So there are all types of issues that arise. One's limited in what types of uses one can make of the perishvias. So this becomes a very, very dear problematic area to be so careful about Kedusha Shvius. They sell now wine which has Oitza Bezdin and has Kedusha Shvius to it. But it's Mutter Bachila. And yet, I know many people that don't want to touch it. It's very cheap. Because it's really done on a non-profit basis. But they don't want to touch it. They say, what am I going to do? I'm going to be careful that I don't spill one drop of wine in my house. So I don't need to be bothered with such a problem. I'd rather pay a lot more money and not be bothered with this problem. So Bnei Brak, the machmer, that the fruits which grow in non-Jewish areas have Kedusha Shvius. Now, one major, major complication in this whole area of Shvius had to do with the fact the Jewish farming in Eretz Yisrael started circa 1880. I think about 120, 125 years back. And when the first Shvius approached, there was a huge uproar if they should observe Shvius or not. And the Chachmei Yerushalayim was strongly of the view that Shvius should be observed. Others felt that the situation was too critical, too tenuous for these people to be able to observe Shvius and survive, to live to tell the tale. So they went to Europe, and they went, I believe, even to Rabbi Yitzchok Elchanan. It happened during his lifetime, and he was among those that signed in favor of the Mechira, of selling the land to Arabs during that time. Now what's important to note in all of this, that all of the Mechiras which took place, let's say from the 1880s or the 1890s and on, all the way until after 1948, all of them supposed that the land would actually be worked by non-Jews. None of them actually gave a heter to do those types of malocha during Shvius which would be prohibited by Torah, such as plowing the land, etc., and sowing the land. There was no heter that was given for that. The first one really that was matter that was Rav Kook. I should not say Rav Kook, I'm sorry. Rav Kook died in 1935. Rav Kook would adhere to the psak of Rav Yitzchok Elchanan, but Rav Kook himself never in fact allowed a Jew to plant the land or plow the land. So this was something which happened after the rise of Medinas Yisrael. I'm not exactly sure who ultimately took responsibility for it, but for anyone to blame Rav Kook this is Rav Kook's psak, that's also inaccurate. Rav Kook was matter what Rav Yitzchok Elchanan was matter, not more than that. So this became, now, the question was this meant to be a permanent psak? Which is almost self-evident that it can't be meant to be a permanent psak, Because if there's a mitzvah in the Torah of Shemitah, then we're obviously not supposed to invent a way to do away with the mitzvah altogether. That certainly can't be the case. And the question was, again, how possible or impossible it was to be Mekayim Shvius. Now, what I'm pointing out in all of this is not what stance any particular Shitas took. And this Chacham Yerushalayim and the Chazon Ish were united, in fact, in not being in agreement about the Heter Mechira. They both agreed about that. But the larger issue that remained is what is the status, for example, of those fruits. So these people guarded the fruits. They held that they were, in fact, belonged to non-Jews. So there was no problem locking everyone out. If I disagreed and I considered the Mechira invalid, so then, in fact, my view is these are the fruits of Jews that Jews are locking up. So does this make the fruits osur or not? Now, clearly, if you held like Chacham Yerushalayim, they certainly would not be osur. Because sof kol sof, even if they violated Meshumma, they violated Meshayigeh, but if they violated Meshumma, Meshumma would not make render the fruits osur b'achila, prohibited in eating. So, consequently, this issue, if Meshumma has a status of Isra Heter, is a very relevant one, because now we're dealing not only, because large parts of Eretz Yisrael, and certainly people that very sincerely meant the Mechira, we could question if everyone that signed on to the Mechira means it sincerely. But there are many people who very sincerely mean the Mechira. So what's the status of their fruits? A second issue that arose, we'll come back to the underlying issues of this, but a second issue that arises, is my involvement with them considered that I'm machzik oivrei aveir? If I do business with them and I buy the fruits, am I being misayei de oivrei aveir? I'm oivrei lifnei iver? Because now that I'm doing business with the person, so I'm encouraging him, in fact, in his course of action. So they're very interesting. I don't know if there are any other tshuvas on shvius, but Rav Moshe Zecher Tzadik Livracha wrote a tshuva. On this particular nekuda, he wrote a tshuva. And Rav Moshe asked a very interesting question. We know that in Shas, that the Tanoim at times disagreed with each other. And we know certainly that there were places that had different practices because their Tana held a certain way. And he was the Rav in that city, and the people in his city followed him. And we know the Gemara even questions, they were not 100% sure of what took place historically. If Beis Shammai, in fact, followed its particular Shita, or they didn't follow its particular Shita. But the Gemara does at least have one view in Yevamos, that Beis Shammai, in fact, followed its particular views, even when they clashed with the views of Beis Hillel, and even if the views of Beis Shammai were lekula, not lechumah. Now we have, according to Beis Shammai, if two brothers were married to two sisters, and one brother died without having children, so now there's the halacha of Yibam. So does Yibam apply to a sister-in-law? Now, Achos Ishto, according to the laws of the Torah, one may not marry the sister of one's wife. So what happens when it comes to a situation of Yibam? That a halacha is in accordance with Beis Hillel, that if she's a woman that I'm not allowed to marry in the first place, then I cannot do Yibam with her as well. And since I can't marry the sister of my wife, so I couldn't do Yibam with such a woman either. Beis Shammai said, not only is it permissible to do Yibam with such a woman, but it's a mitzvah to do Yibam with such a woman. So now, if we take the view that Beis Shammai actually lived up to this particular practice, and they followed what they themselves preached, so we'll come to a very strange situation, that Beis Shammai was celebrating a mitzvah. And if you ask Beis Hillel, so Beis Hillel would tell you that they at least b'shoigeg were violating an Issa Koris. The marry your sister-in-law, he's an Issa Koris. It's a pretty severe Issa. So we could ask ourselves, would Beis Hillel involve themselves in Beis Shammai's activities? In other words, let's say I own the wedding hall, and the guy from Beis Shammai came, and he wants to marry a sister-in-law, and he's going to make a wedding. Can I rent the place to him? Can I provide services to help to work out the shidduch to make sure that it goes through? Or I'm violating the fneiva? So Rav Moshe says undoubtedly we don't find any intimation in Shas that I could not assist the people in following their moral da'asra in their tunnel. So he said, it must be that as long as they have a psak, even if I disagree with the psak, but I cannot call it lifnei iver, that I'm being machshel the people when they're following the psak. That was Ramesh's view on this. This is the one. I don't know of any other tshuva that he wrote on the matter of Shvius. I think that he was very careful, I think, at least not to put in writing. I think he was very careful to stay out of all the kind. He was an Ish Sholem, and not being a Rav in Eretz Yisrael, I think he was very careful to stay out of there, the machlokes in which tore Eretz Yisrael apart, and he let it be. He realized, obviously, no one was coming to ask him for a final rendering of what they ought to do, so he left it alone. But here he did address this issue. This is a very central issue, which means that if I believe that Meshumer is Mutter, I can do business with the person and not say I'm being Mechazik, I'm helping a person to violate the Torah, when his Rav tells him that it's Mutter. So this is a very, very, we're dealing obviously that the Rabbonim on both sides, we're talking about serious authorities. You know, we're not talking that of people that are ignorant and declare themselves authorities. That's not what we're talking about. But this issue divided very, very great people. I mean, Rav Kook, as I've mentioned before, was one of the greatest goyim in Klal Yisrael. There are three people that the Chazon Ish ever addressed a letter to in his life where he wrote Morom. The Rav Chaim Oizer was one, who was the greatest poysik in Europe. The second one was Rav Kook. And the third person at this point in time, I don't know who the third one is. But there are only three people in his entire life that the Chazon Ish would call to Maron. Now for the Chazon Ish to call someone Maron, that's a pretty heavy title. I mean, that this super goyim, the master of Kol HaTorah Kula, referred to someone as Maron, is an awesome title. And Rav Kook, Zeichet Tzadik Levroch, was one of the three people that he referred, that he wrote to in such a fashion. So we understand that Rav Kook was, and I was undoubtedly was one of the super goyim of his dor. So those that follow, you know, his psak, we're talking someone that followed, a person of stature, of authority, you can't say, according to Ramosha, that we're being machshel them, that we're over lifnei iver, because we're assisting people to follow the psak of such a person. Yes?
I was just wondering, I had once asked you, he says, he holds from that person that he's a posik, you can trust him and you're not worried about, you don't have to worry about the thing, right?
Yeah.
But I'm just thinking that the opponents of Rav Kook didn't hold from this.
Listen,
we try
to avoid the excesses which unfortunately surround these parashiyos. And I'm very, very careful about that. And as I say, we cannot deny historical fact. The Chazon Ish was one of the strongest opponents of the Het HaMechira, without any doubt. But it's that same Chazon Ish who addressed Rav Kook as Maron. And that we need to keep in mind. But here are things that he very strenuously disagreed with Rav Kook's approach, in many different areas. But the cover, the harotza that he had for him, is a super godel that is beyond question. That's unfortunately that we made a standard part of Jewish life is the assassination, the character assassination of people that don't see eye to eye with a particular view. Ramesh Zeichet Tzadik Levrocha was a very vociferous opponent of such activities. And when asked about it once, he said that in the Shtetlach in Russia, he said there were people that politically, that most of the Rabbanim disagreed with. But they were formidable Tamidei Chachamim. When they died, he said, we were maspirim in all the Shtetlach in our area of Russia. We were not maspirim because we agreed with him. We disagreed with many of the things that he did. But he was a formidable Talmud Chacham. And that has to be respected. And unfortunately, that's one of the things that as the 20th century wore on, that we buried into our own loss. It does not enhance the Kavod HaTorah. Not at all enhance the Kavod HaTorah. Now, what were the issues which surrounded the Mechira? The principal issue which surrounds the Mechira is the following. The Gemara says in Avodah Zarah, Daf Chof, the Pasuk states Lo Sichonim. And there are three interpretations of Lo Sichonim, which are all the halacha, but we're going to focus on one definition of Lo Sichonim tonight, one of the three definitions. They're all the halacha, they're all brought la halacha. But one definition of Lo Sichonim is Lo Siten Lohem Chaniya Ba'aretz. That one may not sell a portion of Eretz Yisrael to a non-Jew. I've mentioned many times that if one wants to know what a Zionist is, I'll tell you what a Zionist is. And I wish only that those that sat in the Prime Minister's chair in the Knesset would be Zionists of this nature. And the world would look a little bit differently. It would look differently than it looks. I met Dayan Weiss, Zechat Tzadik L'Vroch, the Minchas Yitzchak once. That's because I'm friendly with one of the, today, a person who's one of the Dayanim in the Eidah Haredes. And he had a very interesting Shaila. And he did not want to pask in the Shaila, because it involved an enormous amount of money, monetary loss. And he figured, listen, the Dayan Weiss has a heter, so let the person have the heter. Why should he was not inclined to be matered? It had to do with the fact that at that time in the Nevei Yaakov was one of a few shchunot in Yerushalayim which were inhabited by both Jews and Arabs. There was a Rishalmi Sefer, and who was very, very poor, who lived in an apartment, and he outgrew the apartment, so he put the apartment up for sale. He wanted to sell it, and then he would take the money and buy a larger apartment. And the highest offer by $5,000 that he had was from an Arab. And he was not very happy with this idea, but $5,000 is an enormous amount of money to such a person. So he went to the Rav, and he asked the Rav if he's allowed to sell it to an Arab. And the Rav was really very disinclined that there's any heter. In fact, he discussed the matter with him. We went through the major shittas, and the major shittas clearly hold that it's aser. There may be some shita that holds that it's mutra, I've discovered subsequently, but the major shittas certainly hold that it's aser. He said, I'm going to Dayan Weiss. So he said, come with me. You'll meet Dayan Weiss. So we go up to Dayan Weiss. And he asked, this is one of a few shaylas that he asked him. So Dayan Weiss looks at him. And he says, I have to tell you. He says, I have the shayla 2-3 times a week. There are a number of shchunot in Yerushalayim that are mixed Arabs and Jews. And I have the shayla regularly. And he looks at him and he says, I'm a tonish, a koyif, and a chaylik, and Eretz Yisrael, so I'll go. You can't sell it. He said, it's an Eastern. You're not allowed to sell pot of Eretz Yisrael to an Anjou. There's nothing to talk about. This is the head of the Haredis. Okay? That's someone, that's a Zionist. That's someone that understands what Zionist is. Rabbi Yisai. That's someone that understands what Zionist is, what I was Zionist. And something, as I said, I wish that those that sat in the seat of the Rosh Memshalah would have that Avas Zionist that he had. So this is first and foremost the problem, that it's usher to sell the land to an anjur. So how, on what basis could you violate the law to get out of shvius? Secondly, let's say you wanted to violate the law. So then we have another problem. And that problem is, so you might sometimes want to say that maybe I'm supposed to violate an isur, sometimes a Talmud Chacham should violate an isur kal, so the Dam Ora shouldn't violate an isur rab. Okay, if you want to say that that's the case, that it may not be the case, because this is a law in the Torah which applies Bizman HaZeh, and Shvius may only be the Rabbanon. There are varied schools of Torah. Shvius is the rice of the Rabbanon Bizman HaZeh. But even suppose I wanted to take it, that's controversial. Tosis, there is more than one explanation of what this halachic maimer means. But sof kol sof, that would assume that I'm doing something myself. But the farmer that owns the land is not the one who actually sells it to the Arab. It's sold by a rov. So how does the rov do it? The same way that I sell the chametz for Pesach. You appoint me as your shliach. But if there's a law in the Torah, then in shliach l'dvar avera, you can't appoint a shliach to violate a law in the Torah. So not only is it a law, but it doesn't work in the first place. It doesn't get sold. So this was the Chazon Ish's objection. His strongest objection to the sale. He had other objections, but his strongest objection was this. It's a lav in the Torah to do the Bechira, and ain't shliach l'dvar aveira, so it doesn't even work. When all said and done, the Bechira didn't work. So this is, I said, an issue which is a very divisive issue in Eretz Yisrael, Ara Yehimazah. I mean, the Rebbe Yoshev has been pushing already, and I think since the last Shvius, that the Rabbanut Yerushalayim stance be that they don't use such prayers. The Lechatchila is not to use them. That's what he pushed them very, very strongly to adopt such a stance in accordance with the Psak of the Chazon Ish and with Chachmei Yerushalayim. So this is one of the major issues which is casts a very heavy shadow over everything that has to do with Perish Shvius and Eretz Yisrael. Now another issue which is a very difficult issue is the issue of Orla. And now normally Orla, we would say most times Orla is not the biggest problem in the world, because it takes a number of years until the tree starts to give fruit. So how many trees would really know what happened to be Orla? But the problem is a much more profound problem, because if you take a sapling and you transplant it from one place to the next, now it already kind of matured enough that it's going to give fruits, and it's going to give fruits in the first year. And yet those fruits are Orla. So this is a very big problem. It's particularly a problem with grapes, by the nature of how vines are planted, that they take the vines and they replant them in the ground. With grapes, is a very, very big problem in Orla. So they're working for resolutions on this. One of the resolutions that they're working on is that according to the Mishnah, that if you take the sapling with soil around it, and you replant it with that soil that it was in beforehand, that the clock doesn't start again. So you actually have ways of what they're doing. So the other way is, you don't necessarily have a problem in the first year with pears. But you may have problems, as I said, further down the line. But the way with the replanting of saplings, you can have problems even from the first year with them. So what they're doing is, they take saplings and they develop them for 3 years. Then they bring them with the earth. And therefore, when they plant them, they'll give fruits immediately, and yet there won't be an orla problem with them. So this is one of the methods, and this has been numbered a huge, probably millions of saplings in Eretz Yisrael, to be able to deal with the issue of resolving issues of modern agronomy with the halacha of orla. This is one of the methods that's used. Now, I want to come now to the... Yeah?
I'm sorry, but there's no problem right here in America.
But Suffolk orla and chutz is mutter. Suffolk orla and chutz l'aretz is mutter. So, in Mamela, it's usually not worse than Suffolk orla, and Rove is certainly not orla in this country. Now, we've talked about the fact that among the tithes that one has to take to separate the tumas and maises, and we'll go through this line by line soon, is the Maisa Sheni. Now, the Maisa Sheni has Kedusha. Now, I can't actually bring their, I can't bring the Peiros that eat them in Yerushalayim today, because there are no Mechitzas to Yerushalayim. So that won't work. So I have to do Pidyon, I have to redeem them. Now, I don't have to redeem them at par value, because I can't consume them anyhow. If I could consume them by bringing the money and spending the money in Yerushalayim, I have to redeem them at par value. But since I can't actually use them, so I can take $10,000 of Per Maisa Sheni and redeem it on one pruta, and that's enough. The problem is that the coin that I redeem it on, first of all, it gets filled up. It has, every coin has a finite limit. It has X amount of prutas. It has to be a coin. I can't just take a piece of gold, you know, I'll buy a gold bar, and whatever, it'll take till who knows when till it ever gets filled up. But it has to be kesef tzura, means it has to be a coin. So coins are limited. How large are the largest coins that we have? Now, what is the size of a pruta? Now, that can vary anywhere. There are some that would say a penny. In Rabbi Yosher's view, I'm not sure exactly why, the reason for it, but he says it approximates an American nickel, 5 cents. So you take a coin, you take a Susan Anthony dollar, So you can use it 20 times. After 20 times, it's filled up. You can't redeem on it anymore. So what you have to do is now you redeem that all the way down to a nickel's worth onto a nickel of a different Susan Anthony dollar. So now I have now 19 empty slots in each one. And I keep going up, 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 up. When it gets full, well, I have to redeem it again. And finally, when the second one starts to get full, I'll redeem it back to the first one. So that's how, between two coins, if you keep redeeming them, each person, personally, you can keep on going. Right? Because once finally, I redeemed on the second coin up to 20 times. So now I'll take those, all of those 20, and I'll redeem them on one prut to the first coin. So now I will have emptied it out, except for one prut is worth. So one prut that we want to keep there. Now, why do we want to keep one prut to there? Because what happens if I only have a fraction of a prut? Let's say if my assumption is that a prut is a nickel, and I only have 2 cents worth of Meiser Sheni. 2 cents of Meiser Sheni you cannot redeem on a prut to coin. Why? Because it's not enough. It just doesn't connect. Because it's too little. But if it has one prutus worth of Meiser Sheni on the coin, then I can even add fractional prutus to it. This is an idea. They have a term for this in Eretz, which is called pruta chamura. It means a pruta which is life. It has actual Meiser Sheni, real Meiser Sheni at least, of a prutus worth on it. Now, how do you get this coin? Well, it's hard to get because if I go to the marketplace and I buy, particularly in Eretz Yisrael, a lot of the stuff may have been had tumas and mice taken from it already, so I don't know. So the best way to do it is you go to the farm and you get, and I'll tell you why in a moment, why you do this. You take olives or grapes right from the tree of the vine. You don't take apples. Why? Because there are only three minim that are definitely chayav min ha-Torah. Dogon, grains, tirosh, oil, meaning from olive oil, olives. Rather, the tirosh is wine, and yitzer, as the olive oil. Those are the only three minim which are definitely mechuyav min ha-Torah. All the rest, apples, pears, oranges, etc., is machlokes rishonim of the chayav min derabbanan and the chayav min deraisa. So I need something which is at the highest level that has, even if I want to redeem the Meiser Sheni of grapes, which is min ha-Torah, which and that's that has that level of kedusha. So I want to buy a bunch of grapes that definitely a tevel. So when I redeem the Meiser Sheni, I get at least one prutas worth. Now, let's do the math a little bit. Chita achas pateras kol akri in the Truma Gedolah. So one grain is enough for the Truma Gedolah. So that's really inconsequential. So let's, for argument's sake, make believe it doesn't exist, because it doesn't change the value. So if I started with $1 of grapes, and I took off the Truma Gedolah, so we'll say that's only a drop, so I still have a dollar's worth. Now I take the Meiser Rishon. The Meiser Rishon is 10%. So that's 10. So I'm down to 90. The Meiser Sheni is 1/10 of what's left, which is 9. Okay, so if I started with $1 worth, and now I have 9 cents worth of Meiser Sheni left, that's more than a pruta. So if I redeem that onto a Susan Anthony dollar, onto one pruta, one nickel's worth, so now I have a coin that definitely has a pruta of Meiser Sheni on it. Now, if I didn't have, let's say, instead of buying a dollar's worth, I bought 50 cents worth. So I only have 4.5 cents of Meiser Sheni. If we'll assume, as Rabbi Yoshev assumes, that the nickel is a pruta, I don't have a pruta of Meiser Sheni. So there's no way that I could redeem that onto a coin which doesn't yet have a pruta of Meiser Sheni on it. This is the most difficult practical obstacle in actually fulfilling the din of Trumas and Meisers, how to be paid to the Meiser Sheni. Now, there were those that had a chap, and maybe in Chutz La'aretz we may be stuck with this chap. You know, the Yeshivish of mine had a very cute trick. What did they do? They got two coins, and what they did is they said that when coin A becomes full, so I made a declaration that it should be redeemed onto one prut of coin two. And I also made a declaration among coin two becomes full, it should be redeemed onto one prut of coin one. So I put my two coins away, and they automatically keep shifting one to the other. I don't have to worry about it until I come to the time of the beer in the fourth or the seventh year before Pesach. I have to get rid of them. And then after Pesach, I have to worry about getting a new set of coins. This is what some people have done, and I say in Chutz La'aretz we may perhaps have no better alternative. But Rabbi Yosef is not happy with this. He considers this a zulzul, a degrading way. In other words, to deal with the mitzvah of pinyan ma'is sheni, he does not consider it appropriate. But as I say, it may actually work lahalacha. It doesn't mean it's advised that we do it, but I don't know if he would say that it doesn't work lahalacha. So that's the issue of ma'is sheni. Now, if we bought fruits that are a little bit more than a dollar, we probably could be seimach that we don't have a problem, even for a dollar's worth. Why is that? 85% of the fruits that are exported, 85% of the exporters from Eretz Yisrael do not take trumas and maizers at all. Now, I think we could readily assume in Astam that when we go to the fruit store and you buy from one box of fruits, that all of those fruits came from the same packing house. You know, nobody bothered after they were packed to go in the back room of a store and start mixing all of them around into 25 different, you know, shipments. When I stop, it all comes from the same shipment.
If they did, it would be
bottled,
right?
What?
If they did it here in the store, it would be packaged.
It wouldn't be bottled. It's double sheyesh lo matir. So you would be no bitter. Bitter wouldn't help. Yeah, but you know it was already packed in Eretz Yisrael. That wouldn't change it. Once the din that Trumas and Rises is chal, it would not remove the din Trumas and Rises. So you're talking that if we bought a dollar's worth here, that we could consider that it's all the same status, either it came from a frum kibbutz and it's not mechuyev in Trumas and Rises at all, or it came from an unfrum kibbutz and it's definitely mechuyev in Trumas and Rises. So my inclination has been that if one didn't have a pruta chamura, but you bought at least a dollar's worth, so that the ma'is sheni, as I said, is more than 5 cents worth of ma'is sheni, so then you would be able to redeem it even if you didn't have a pruta chamura. We could assume that we had a pruta's worth of ma'is sheni. That's the assumption, but obviously we would be better off if we were able to establish a system of having a pruta chamura readily available. Now I want to give a demonstration of how one would actually go about. It's not a Jaffa orange, but it will serve the purposes anyhow, of how actually we have to take off Trumas and Maizes. So I brought my props with me. In most Siddurim today, you'll find somewhere a section of Seder of Rosh Hashanah Trumas and Maizes. And the first thing that it says is the whole issue that it talks about is the whole what coin you need to redeem the ma'is sheni. That's the whole introduction is about the halachas of the coin. And you have to put the coin away in a place that you know it will remain undisturbed. So otherwise if someone spent it in the store and you don't have it anymore, you can't redeem on it. You're going to be back to ground zero. So now, very simple. The first thing that you have to do is to make a calculation of the volume of the fruits that you have. And what one needs to do is to cut off an amount which one estimates, but don't be stingy about it, to be a little bit more than 1% of what you have. So if you have 100 oranges you bought, so you need an orange and a little bit. If you have 99 oranges, one orange will suffice. So on this orange, you're going to cut off a little piece, and I don't need too much of a piece to be little more than 1/100th of the flesh of the orange. So we're going to cut off a piece. All right, this is certainly, no doubt, I took off probably about half of this will suffice, without any doubt, that I have more, okay, than 1/100th of them. Yeah. So I have now, let's say 1/100th and a drop of the orange. So the first line is that Yosem Yechem B'meir Sheyesh Kan, the part that exceeds 1/100th, why do I take off a drop more than 1/100th? To Truma Gedola, you need only a Mashahu. So all I need is slightly, I need 1% plus 0.001. So then we say Yosem Yechem B'meir Sheyesh Kan, Harei Truma Gedola. That's the Truma Gedola. Now, what I'm going to do is the following. The 1% that's here, plus 9%, which is still part of this orange that I didn't cut off, or in the bag of oranges, So the text, this is the Chazon Ish's text. So we say, Yosef Mechon Mimeya Sheyesh Kan Arei Truma Gedola B'Tzad Tzvonu. The Truma Gedola is on the northern part. I have to say which part. It means in the top part of this particular orange, piece of orange that's here. Well, what it doesn't make a difference. You don't have to sort that out now. It does not really make a difference. Now I say like this. Also Echon Mimeya Sheyesh Kan, the 1% that's here, that I segregated. And Otisha Chalokim Kavosa, and 9 parts similar to that. So I have 1% here, and 9% that's still attached to this orange. And that I say is also B'tzad Tzvono Shalaperis. That's the Maaser Rishon, because the Maaser Rishon is 1/10. So I've divided the Maaser Rishon into 2 parts. 9 parts still attached to this orange, and 1 part that I segregated here on the side. Now why did I say?
Is that true? That 1 part?
No, I had the part, the plus, what's more than the, what the, what's more than 1%. That's the Truma Gedola. The 1%, I now made my Rishon, together with 9%, it's still part of this orange. Now, why did I leave the 1% on the side? You'll see in a moment. Because after I take off the Maaser Rishon, I have to take Truma's Maaser from the Maaser Rishon. It's 10% of the Maaser Rishon. So 10% of the Maaser Rishon, if the Maaser Rishon is 10%, so that is 1%. So now I say that also echad mimeya, that 1% which is segregated, shasisiv Maaser Rishon, which I have previously made Maaser Rishon, is osi trumas Maaser. Now the reason I want these two things together is because these are the only two parts that are inedible. Truma may not be eaten. So therefore I'm going to have to get rid of them at the end of the process. So they have been segregated, they're not mixed together with anything else. Now, Umayisa Sheni, I say, most years, year 1, year 2, year 4 and year 5, one has to take Umayisa Sheni. So I say the Umayisa Sheni is on the southern side. Well, I don't necessarily. You'll see why in a moment, why I don't have to know. Because I don't even know necessarily what year these fruits are from, either. So I say the following. Now, if it's so, I said, Maaser Oni. So the first we'll go to Maaser Oni. Maaser Oni is in the 3rd and the 6th year. So I say Maaser Oni B'tzad Dromo. The Maaser Oni, which would be 10% of what's left, 9%, is on the southern part. Fine. V'im Tzorach Maaser Sheni. Suppose in fact that this is not from year 3 and year 6, but it's either from year 1, year 2, year 4, or year 5, that it needs Maaser Oni, Maaser Sheni. So the Maaser Sheni should be on the Dorum, on the southern side. Now we come to the chilul of the Maaser Sheni, the redemption of the Maaser Sheni. Umuchulal hu, and it is redeemed, v'chumsho. The halacha is that if I redeem a hegdish that I own, so not only I have to add 20%, right? Hu v'chumsho. I have to add a fifth to it. Shaila what that fifth is, and a measure that is, but I have to add a fifth. So since I am the owner of this orange, and I'm redeeming and not redeeming someone else's, umuchulal hu v'chumsho. So the chilul has to be for the amount plus a fifth. A pruta b'madbeya sheyichatil maaser sheni. On that coin that I've set aside for redeeming maaser sheni. Now similarly, the halacha is the first 3 years something is arla. In year 4 we have the din of revai. Now there's a machlokus in the Gemara in the beginning of the Ketz and Mevorachim. If revai is only a netta, revai only applies to grapes. Or Ravai, rather, Taran Ravai only applies to grapes, to vineyards. Or the din of Ravai applies to Netta Ravai, to all fruits. Now, if it applies to all Netta Ravai, that halacha has the same halacha as Maaser Sheni. It has to be consumed in Yerushalayim. So I'm back to the same problem. So I need Imahu Ravai, Imahulu Huvachumsha, Prutum Ravai, Shiyichati, Lechulu Maaser Sheni, Ravai. I set aside that coin for Chulu Maaser Sheni and for Ravai. So now I have finished the process. Now since it's not a vadai, we're not sure that it takes tumas and rice, I didn't go to the farm and pick it from the tree itself. So I don't make a bracha on it. Now, this part, now what do I do with what's left? So here I have the truma gedoyla and the tumas maisa. So what do I do with it? So what? So this is a machlekes. There's a machlokes between Bnei Brak and Yerushalayim and this one as well. In Chachmei Yerushalayim said it suffices just to tie it up in a bag and throw it out. That's all. As long as I'm not mevazeh it, it's not considered a bizoyan, it's tied up in a bed, that's all I have to do. I don't have to bother with it. In Bnei Brak, they did not allow this. They said that you have to keep until it rots. So in Bnei Brak, in fact, they have separate garbages which they keep just to throw the Truma Gedolah into. And they let it stay in there until it rots. And after it rots, they throw it out, but they don't throw it out before it. So again, this also divides Chachmei Yerushalayim with Bnei Brak in Hanhogas. So this is the practical issue which is involved of how actually to take over the Trumas and Maizah. It's not very complicated. Once someone gets used to it, it's a matter of minutes to be able to be mekayim this mitzvah. Oh, the coin you keep, and you keep redeeming it until it comes to the time of the beer, Erev Pesach, in the 4th year and the 7th year, and then you have to destroy it and get rid of it. Oh, you can throw it down the sewer. It's also fine. Throw it into the Yam, into the Atlantic, you know.
I
don't believe that we take Truma. I believe that it's Potter. From what I remember. I'm not 100% sure, but from what I remember, I don't think there's a Chiyuv Truma in my system. I say, I don't want to make a definitive statement. I do not remember clearly.
And with regard to the Netzer Avad, is that a separate Hafrasha and Pidyon?
It's a separate Pidyon from the Maaseh Sheni, yes.
So when you take out from Maaseh Sheni and Netzer Avad, you're using two prutas of the coin.
You could be using two prutas, yes.
I have oranges, veli peppers, and three other meaning. I want to do all once.
So here in the text, you see the Chazon Ish added for this possibility. And he wrote, Imas ma'aser minim harbe, suppose you have varied minim. So lahos of kol min al mino, each min respectively on each min. So I would have three piles here, one of pepper, one of oranges.
Say one mashu plus one set of each?
Each one, yes.
Put it together.
Yeah.
And you say,
go through. Call min al mino. Each.
No,
call min with the 1% which corresponds with its min.
Oh, each one al mino.
Yes,
okay.
Correspond.
Min
al mukav means they should all be in the room. They should all be present. I should not mice as something which is someplace else.
Lechatchila.
They should all. Even with one min. They should all be in the same room, l'chatchila. Yeah, but the evidence chal, even if it's not, but l'chatchila is supposed to be a dinam min ha-mukav. Okay, Rabbi Yisai, I thank you.